it goes.
This is Suit Up Sports.
Suit Up Sports.
Where opinions are as sharp as a tailored suit. No fluff, no gimmicks, just unfiltered, hard-hitting takes on sports and a whole lot more. It's time to suit up. Now here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome to Suit Up Sports. I'm your host, DJ The Suit Stout, along with 10-year NFL vet Frank Garcia. And our special guest today, and this is the first in a series we're starting as a little bonus podcast called Charlotte Sports Originals, is Mark Yarbs Yarbrough, who I was lucky enough to be an intern for in 1996, I believe.
So you interned for him?
I interned for him. Wow. And
I didn't know that.
I think 1996. And then
he was on the show. He wasn't really interning for me personally.
But Mark told me what to do.
He sat beside me, and okay. I kind of guided him.
He was Mark, learning. You grew him a lot.
And
by the way, you really must not been able to find any guests if I've had to be your special guest today.
You were, honest to God, first one I called.
So here's the OG of WFNZ.
Yeah. So
before
when I,
you.
Before me. So when I started, and the Charlotte Sports Originals series that we're starting is going to be interviewing people who have been in the Charlotte sports scene for 20-plus years. It could be an athlete. It could be a broadcaster. In Mark's case, somebody who's been in the radio business and also covered these teams, you know, in the locker room. And so I thought Mark would be a perfect one to start out with because WFNZ, you know, was the first sports station in this town. Now, you know, still here, obviously, on a big FM signal. Now we have two sports stations. Mark works at ESPN 730. He's one of the co-hosts of the 2-6 show Afternoon Rush, along with Bobby Rosinski and Al Wallace, and does a good job there.
Traitor.
But
hey,
that's a whole nother.
Hey, that's another podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole another podcast. But yeah, so when I started at FNZ at the time, it was 1996, I believe. And all transparency, I had been kicked out of college at UNC Charlotte for the second time for a fight that I had gotten into.
No.
And the fight went well, but everything after that went to shit. But my dad ran into somebody at a bar one night, a guy named TC, who used to actually be the co-host.
God rest his soul.
God rest his soul on the morning show, on the morning sports page with Mark and Gary and Slania. And TC at the time was the head of promotions for WRFX, The Fox, and John Boy and Billy. And they had this little rinky-dick AM station called Fox 610 that was in this tiny little studio where their studios were off 4th Street. My dad ran into TC and literally said, yeah, we need some help. I went the next day. Another piece of that story. The night before, I was at Bar Charlotte, and at the time, I helped collect for some bookies. And
you're a hitman?
They were owed some money, and they had
what?
A big... They had
what?
To, yeah, true story.
I didn't even know. I've known you for 25 years.
That's new on me. I didn't know that.
These two dudes that were pretty big bookies at UNC Charlotte. And, you know, I never really had to do anything but collect money, and everything was cool. This one dude owed some money. Long story short, they had a guy sucker punch me from behind. So the next day, I had to go to this interview at the radio station with TC, and I had like a little cut above my lip where the guy sucker punched me. And I told him it happened in intramural football at UNC Charlotte. And I got hired as an intern. And so with WFNZ, I would do some stuff with John.
How old were you?
I was probably 20 in 1996. So let's see, I'm 52.
Yeah,
now.
And remember, so we weren't even WFNZ then. We were still.
It was Fox 610.
Fox 610. Yeah. Before that was WAQS. I mean, that was.
And we're in this little corner studio. And literally everyone was in the same room. So
just the one off of Remount?
No, this is off of 4th Street.
4th Street.
It's a parking
the one uptown.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best studio we ever worked in. It had the second story. We could look down to the lobby, and we had all the WRFX, John Boy and Billy, like Jackie Curry. Like it was a great date. You know, Dave Jagler, who's now with the Washington Nationals.
Well, I remember going into that building and,
it's where you started. It was, the best, but we were all in the same studio. So Mark ran the board. And then I sat next to Mark with the phone screen computer in front of me and the phone. And then Jerry Valancourt and Matt Pinto were the hosts of the show, Jerry V and Matt show. And they sat right in front of Mark and I at this little table. And in the corner of the studio was a closet. And every day when John Boy was done doing the John Boy and Billy show, John Boy would walk into our studio and it was his closet. And he'd take his shirt off and he'd have a towel and he'd wipe all the sweat off of him. And then he put a new shirt on and he'd go do whatever he did.
And remember, when you were answering the phones, because we were all in the same room, you had to answer the phone like
you had to whisper. Yeah,
you know, you couldn't even talk. You had to whisper basically. And
yeah,
the call, no, like, what?
It wasn't a soundproof.
Oh, if I was if I was too loud, Jerry and Matt would scold me. They look at me like, "Shut up, dude!" And I literally, talking. I still can remember, be like, "Fox Sports 610, Jerry and Matt show." First name, but John, where are you from?
Yeah,
Charlotte. What do you want to talk about? Hornets. All right, I'll put you on hold.
Jerry would give him the like,
yeah, like
too loud,
quieter. So yeah, so I was Mark's intern really for about 6 months, and you know, during that time I was obviously trying to soak in everything I could about radio, and the production director there at the time was a guy named Andy Abdow, who was still is one of the best in the business, and he taught me a lot about production, and as my role started kind of to grow, and Jerry and Matt would kind of let me do some things that I thought might be funny or whatever. And I remember the first thing I would do is the Chicago Cubs played every day, you know, that back then they had no lights at Wrigley. And so every afternoon I would roll tape. This is before any digital stuff. So we literally were rolling tape and editing with razor blades and all that.
Oh my
stuff.
Gosh. Just like when we used to watch film in high school, they had the reels going.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Yeah.
And it would break and cut and you'd have to stop and tape and duct tape it back together.
Yeah. That's right. And so we would use reels and carts, you know, and I would record these Cub games, and I would dip in the little studio to see what Harry Carey was saying that day, because it was inevitable that at some point of the broadcast, he was going to say something that was just hilarious. And so I would edit those, and I forget exactly how we would play them back. I don't remember if we made it a bit or if Jerry and Matt just talked about it, but I remember that kind of became something that we would do quite a bit. And so, yeah, that's where I started. And Mark had been there. Mark went to App State and got a job.
I came to 610 probably a month after it came on the air. It became a all sports station.
Were you right out of college? 92.
No, there was a year where I worked. I couldn't find a job in broadcast and media. So I worked jobs, temp jobs, whatever. And then August of 1992, 610 WAQS at the time decided to go all sports. And a month after they went all sports, I sent in a resume and a tape on a cassette. Got a call from John Woodstock, who was the program director at the time, had me come over, and he hired me as a weekend board op. That's how I started. I was a weekend board op, 6A to 1A, on the weekends, running just
the entire
ESPN
day,
radio, wow, or whatever. It was all syndicated. There was no live stuff. It was just all syndicated stuff. It was live, but it was syndicated.
What year was this?
92.
Wow, 92.
So August of 92, 610 goes all sports. September of 92. I started.
Is that the origination of the 610?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At 1992.
Yeah, and it wasn't WFNZ until 97.
Okay.
So
was it before when? Because I was here in 95.
It was WFNZ when you started, but before that, when I started, it was Fox.
It was WAQS first.
Yeah.
And then when Pyramid bought WAQS, they turned it into Fox 610.
Yeah.
So it became basically a sister station of 99.7 The Fox.
Yeah.
Are you giving me the history of Charlotte? I had no idea all this. I mean, this is kind of the first time I've been hearing this.
I think a lot of people don't understand that, you know, especially there's people who have listened in this market that listened to FNZ since day one. And then there's people who maybe have picked it up as they moved here over the years who love it and don't know any of the history, but maybe hear stories about certain people or still see Pac-Man on ACC Network or Gary Williams on the morning show or that have no idea that Michelle Tafoya was there.
Yes, I was going to bring her up. Like she and Jerry had an afternoon show for a while on 610, and then she got the job with the Vikings and moved to Minnesota. But Michelle Tafoya was here in China. I helped move Michelle Tafoya into her apartment.
So Jerry V was one of the first sports casters here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then who was after Jerry?
Well,
who was kind of the next big guy?
Well, it's actually a crazy story, and I remember it like it was yesterday. It was Jerry V and Matt's show. Matt Pinto was the play-by-play guy for the Hornets.
And let me back up real quick. In the mornings, Jerry V and Matt did the afternoons. But before them, Terry Gannon actually worked here on 610. He had a morning show with Jim Brinson.
Yep.
There have been a lot of big names that have come through.
Those are the only two live shows?
At the
or were
time.
Those syndicated?
There was a morning show and then an afternoon show. There was middays. I don't think we had anything, that was it.
No, I mean, I think we carried like the Fabulous Sports Bay from 10 to noon.
I remember her.
Yes, it was just different syndication, but the Jerry V and Matt show was the afternoon show, and that was the only live show. And I remember one day we were in there, and it was about 5:15, And you know, that was 5 o'clock hour was our busiest hour. So I'm answering the phones, trying to be quiet. Mark's doing his thing. And Dave Jagler, who's the play-by-play guy for Washington Nationals baseball now, at the time was our sports flash guy. So every 20 minutes, Dave would come in. I'd have to get up. He'd sit down. Nobody touched his headphones or whatever. He would get pissed if we would even joke with him. Like, we'd take his headphones or act like we're wiping them on our ass or something, you know, just to bug Dave out. But Dave would come in and do the flash. Well, I'm answering phone calls, and I start getting phone calls from people who had been watching WSOC news. And at the time, the sportscaster was Harold Johnson, the big guy. And he was here forever. If you grew up in Charlotte like I did, everybody remembered Harold Johnson, the big guy, just a great personality sportscaster. And, he went on his sportscast on TV and said that App State was looking for a new basketball coach, and he threw Jerry Valancourt's name in it as if he was the hire. So people are calling me saying Jerry's leaving to go to App State.
Was he a basketball coach?
He was a big basketball guy. He worked.
He had been assistant at App before he got into broadcast.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was tied into like he did a lot of the
Adidas. Yeah,
worked for the Hornets, so he did a lot of. He went from sideline reporting to color analyst, so he was a big basketball guy and knew all the people in college hoops. And so during the break, you know, everybody takes their headphones off, and I went, "Hey, I'm getting a lot of phone calls that Jerry's going to be the basketball coach at App State." And right when I say it, I see Matt's face just turn to stone, like anger, like I've never seen. And Jerry goes, just tell him, you know, just tell him that, yeah, I'm going to be the coach. Like, he just blew it off totally. So, and Mark, jump in if I'm missing anything. So we go back and we're doing the show, and the rest of the show, Matt's barely talking. Like, I can just tell he's pissed. And after the show, we're asking questions, and Jerry leaves, and Matt really doesn't answer anything. The next day, I believe it was in the sports page that Jerry was moving to WBT to take over Afternoon Drive and do a sports show.
Yep.
So he was leaving.
Jerry V Show.
Jerry V Show. Yep. So he was leaving to like our basic AM competitor overnight. Like, he had no contract, no non-compete. Like, he was just changing sides. And I remember I was so pissed off. And I think I hadn't even been hired as a full-time employee yet. Matter of fact, I got back in school.
So Mark Kellogg
was Mike Kellogg.
Mike Kellogg.
So what happened was Matt Pinto's the program director, and he's still doing the Hornets, and he's doing his show by himself. We're still doing our thing. He offers me a job, $16,000 full time. This would have been 1995 or something. I'd been back in school. I was almost finished.
$16,000 is what you were getting paid?
Yeah.
That's twice what you paid me when I first started.
Trust me, I learned from the best. Like I always said, no one was better at making chicken salad out of chicken shit than we were. But anyway, I took the job. And so now, you know, I'm a producer, or, you know, and they sell the station again. And so Chris McKee was, I think, the assistant PD at the Fox, Jeff Kent.
Yep.
And I remember somewhere along the way, I had to choose either I could stay with the Fox or I could go with FNZ. Well, I knew at FNZ I had an opportunity to grow, whereas the Fox was already the number one station in town, and you know, there was nowhere for me to go there. So I went with FNZ, as did Mark and the whole crew. And then Mike Kellogg came in from Boston as our new GM. You know, big Boston guy, three-piece suit, you know, white Porsche, you know, hated anyone. He thought everyone that was Southern was a complete dumbass. And he starts whacking everybody. Like, he wouldn't even make eye contact with you. And he just starts firing people left and right.
He was the first guy that I really got along with that I knew at the station, honestly. When we'd go to Vinny's over on South End.
Yeah.
You know, that's when the station was first kind of, you know, starting up when I met him for the first time.
And Mike brought, that's when 610 became WFNZ.
That's right.
He did the name change, brand change. And DJ, you know, you remember this, our kind of introduction, the rebranding, grand opening, whatever you want to call it, of WFNZ was at Morton's.
Yep.
He had this huge gala. We were like tuxedos. I mean, this was...
He had like models on a runway.
Yeah, this was...
Cigars.
So whiskey. Over the top, it was ridiculous.
I'd never been to a Morton's in my life. Like, I thought Steakhouse was Quincy's, and I'm not kidding. Yeah. I walk in this place.
Sizzler's Quincy's.
And I'll never forget Kellogg at the time. He really does start getting rid of everybody. And so I go in his office one day, and I said, "Hey, man, you know, can I talk to you for 5 minutes?" No eye contact. And he just goes, "Meet me in the lobby at noon." And that's it.
He liked you.
No, he wouldn't even look at me.
Oh, you didn't know if he liked
you. He thought I was a dumb redneck. He thought anyone from the South was a dumb redneck. Yeah. And so he picks me up at 12 in his Porsche And we go, and he's taking me to lunch, and we go to Arby's on South Boulevard. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. And we go in there.
He thinks you're a dumb redneck, and he's taking you to Arby's?
Taking me to Arby's, because he probably thinks that's what I like, although I do love Arby's. Cheddar, the beef and cheddar. We sit down, and he goes, what do you want? I mean, just being a total asshole. And I just said, you know, look, dude, you're firing everybody. And I just wanted to let you know what I do. And if you fire me, you're going to make a big mistake, because I do all the production. I do the commercials. I do the producing. I also have been through hell, in and out of school. I fought my ass off to get back to where I am now. And if you fire me, you're making a huge fucking mistake. And I said it just like that. And he goes, what do you mean you've been through a lot of stuff? And so then in my head, I'm going, damn it, DJ, you should have not even opened the door. But as I normally do, I just was transparent. And I told him all the issues I'd had with fighting and trouble and all this stuff. And his eyes perked up. And then he starts telling me stories of things that he had gone through in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And
we speaking his language.
And we were right on the same page. He's also a big New York Giants fan, as am I. So then we started seeing that and from there, he and I really were inseparable until he left in 2001 or two. And he actually offered me to go with him back to Boston. But what he did when he came was he brought the WEEI style of sports radio.
Yep. Which was the big station around the country.
Yeah.
Everybody recognized
it. At the time, it was one of the top three. It still is a big sports station. But
Remember we went down to, God, was it? I even forgot where it was, near the beach. We had like a.
It was like
a retreat.
Kiowa.
Sean Grandy.
Yeah.
Came in and spoke.
Turtle Point.
Yeah. He brought Sean Grandy in from W. He was the play-by-play voice now of the Celtics.
Yep.
He came in and spoke.
He also flew in. Who was the famous
the voice guy? Jim Cutler.
Jim Cutler came in, who still does ESPN and everybody else.
Yeah.
But he also flew in the afternoon host, I believe. Yeah. Eddie
Arnold.
Was it Eddie Arnold? One of those. Big on-air guy. Yeah.
Dale Arnold. I'm combining. Eddie Arnold was a country singer, I think. Sorry.
Yeah, it was one of those guys from Boston. So, like, he brought in the guys that kind of were in the beginning of starting sports radio. You know, the fans started it, and then And so, long story short, Matt Pinto was our afternoon host guy, and so we were going to add middays. Well, we start talking to Steve Zabin, and we start putting these game plans together, and then Matt Pinto comes in one day and says he's leaving. He's taking the play-by-play job for the Dallas Mavericks. So now we're like, damn, you know, we were just getting excited about relaunching kind of FNZ. And so we start bringing in guys to audition for it. Mark Packer was one of the guys that we brought in after his audition. I mean, everybody in the room kind of knew that that was a guy. And Mark had never done radio, not like that.
And remember at the time, was it Pack was doing the show with Sandy?
Well, when we hired him, it was to do middays with Sandy Penner.
Yeah.
And
Zabin was doing mornings.
Yep. And so we started that, and then when Pinto left, we decided we'd split Pac-Man and Penner. Pac would do the afternoon show, which we brought two co-hosts in every day, whether it be athletes or from the newspaper or whatever. And then Penner did middays, and I mean, that's where we kind of started. I mean, we've had so many shows.
Who was doing the mornings?
At the time, we had Imus, I believe.
Imus, yeah, we did Imus for a while, and I never will forget this story. So we go over to the Speedway to do a show. You know, in May, I was right. 600 was Sunday. Imus came in to do his show live from the Speedway. And, you know, we're over there. It's early in the morning. Everybody had to be over there and all this. And Bob White, the great engineer who still does stuff around this town, was talking to somebody. And Imus heard him talk. Imus stopped his show in the middle of the show, what he was doing, and said, excuse me. He got all over Bob White.
Wore him out.
And Bob White basically just said, I will pull the plug on this damn show. You don't tell me what to do.
Wow.
Bob White told Imus.
And it was in front of an audience. So we sold tickets to be there to watch this broadcast. Mm-hmm. So he was ripping them in front of an audience. And I'm 26. I mean, I'm young. And Mark, I'm thinking, dude, Imus is a
asshole. So what was your title at this point?
I was a producer.
You're still just a producer?
I just produced Primetime with Pac-Man. Okay. That's what became when Matt Pinto left. So I was producing Pinto. And then when he left, Pac-Man slipped in there, and that's when we called it Primetime with Pac-Man. So I was producing that show, but I also did a lot of production, you know, all the bits. So one of the things that EEI did was they would do funny bits, like stuff that you would produce and play them during breaks that were funny. And so I did all of those.
Fill people in that, I mean, because if you're listening to this for the first time and you're hearing the history of WFNZ, people probably don't even know what a producer does.
Well, my job at that point in time was anything that we needed for the show. So I booked all the guests, which is really where I made my name. I was relentless at booking guests. And Pac-Man, and you know, we had better guests than anybody.
And and Frank, you got to remember back then, it was a lot harder to get guests on. You basically, and we used to call it what, room roulette or whatever, hotel bingo, where you would literally call somebody, try to get their room number, and then call them on the fly and ask them if they could come on.
Yeah, this is before all the technology.
Well,
this
was cell phones.
There was no
the dial up
blue books. There was the black books in the NFL where you had everybody's number and all this. You just had to.
You would find out what hotel they were in, and you would just hope.
So this was for you, the way you would look for the NFL guys or the athletes. Anybody. Was. You knew the hotel they're staying at, and you'd call.
And then sometimes you'd get numbers from people that you meet along the way, local players, stuff like that. But it was tough. And Matt Pinto insisted that I would have six guests a day. So that's 2 an hour. And which as I learned more about sports radio, I learned that having a guest on for the sake of having a guest on is not good. And so with Pac-Man, we really made an effort to bring on names
quality.
Yeah. And we did. And we
gosh, I remember some of the names that you guys had, but
Mills Lane was
Pat Croce on the Sixers back in the
day.
He
would fly us in cheesesteaks on his jet.
Jenna Jameson.
I mean,
let's speak.
That's a whole other story.
Who was the guy?
We had James Brown.
James Brown.
Yeah, James Brown.
James Brown.
Blair became a friend of the show.
I remember Rick.
The attorney that was in trouble for so long. The great guy. He was a great guy. But we would have great guests because when people came in there, they enjoyed it. We always had food, and then
Bubba's barbecue.
Yep. And then Pac-Man's in there. We wanted somebody on that show as well. We really wanted to make that afternoon show be very similar to what John Boy and Billy did in the morning because it worked so well. And so we wanted, John Boy has this great laugh. When John Boy laughs, it's just funny as hell. So we wanted somebody that was boisterous and had a great laugh. And Pac-Man, when he would laugh, it was just a loud laugh and it was great. And you couldn't help to feel it, And so Pac was just, people would come in there and have a good time. And then, as we grew the show, Pac would also rip ass when he needed to. I mean, there's times where I would.
What type of ripping ass?
Like, he would, if the guest wasn't prepared or if the guest tried to come with something that was wrong, and Pac would have no problem tearing him apart.
He'd push back.
And Pac was as prepared as anybody you'd ever see. I mean, he's probably has every notebook he would write his notes on for the last 30 years, and he probably has boxes and boxes. I mean, he was always prepared. And so we start doing primetime, and then that show starts growing.
What year was primetime?
I think we launched
in
97.
August of 97.
Because if you were to ask me, and I've been here since 95, and I've been a part of it since 97, not the role I had later on after my career in the NFL, but primetime was kind of the flagship of WFNZ.
Primetime, in my opinion, Primetime's the best sports show that's ever been because of the longevity and because of what it did, the guests and all that. The morning sports page, which we'll get to, I still have people ask me about all the time and what a great show that was too. I mean, we had a great lineup, and when we had the morning sports page and then we had Pac in the afternoon, that was tough to beat. Now, when we put Mac in mornings, Mac's still rocking to this day. So obviously the longevity he's had, and it's a great show too, but Primetime was the one that put us on the map because we had Zabin at the time too, we brought him. He was a national guy. We brought him in locally. Zabin, great guy, one of the most creative dudes that I've ever worked with. I mean, the dude was always thinking and was a good dude. But
Zabin brought the those IR machines with all the sound effects. Zabin is that he brought that to 610.
So is that where Selania learned how to use it?
100%. I remember
Steve Zabin brought that little machine to.
With the little bites in it and the sound
clips. I remember if I had an idea for a bite, I would go to Zabe, and I'll give you a great example. Dave Matthews' band came out with, it was either the first or second album, I don't remember, but there was a song on there called Satellite. And I would, I'd get that song stuck in my head. I was listening to Dave Matthews a lot back then. And so this is the time when satellite dishes started coming out, when DirecTV, so people are starting to get satellite dishes at their home. And Zabe was like one of the first ones. I mean, he would watch games everywhere. And so one day I'm like, dude, whenever he would talk about where you can find the game tonight or whatever it was. And so I told him about this song. So he had that clip in there. So whenever he would talk about watching this game here or there, he'd hit Satellite by Dave Matthews Band. And, And yeah, he was the one that brought that to the station. And then Selenia is the one that kind of made it famous.
Yeah.
Because Selenia, once he got a hold of that damn
thing. Oh, my God.
Selenia married it, basically.
Yeah. He still has it. Yeah. I mean, that thing is has been through the, oh, I mean, he would take it with him. Like,
I think there was over 500 or maybe more than that.
More than that. He had over 1,000.
I just remember the funniest things he used to do was he would get angry about something and he would just start hitting all the buttons. Yeah. He didn't care what it was. He just came through the Rolodex.
That was the one
that got, and Slaney obviously is going to be on this series for sure. But the one that got me every single time, and he knew it would get me too. So if I came in there during a break and he could tell I was in a bad mood, as I'd walk out down the hallway back to my office, he'd play it. But he had one that had like this guy that was doing one of the dog shows, and the guy go, "What a lovely bitch," and it was like in an English accent. He's like, "What a lovely bitch. She is such a lovely bitch." And it would get me every damn time. And he would just play it just to make me laugh. But, you know, with Primetime, when we started that, there was a period of time before we put Pac-Man in there where we would have other people host it. And I was at a golf tournament one day. It was a celebrity golf tournament. Again, this is when Primetime was just starting. This is when Pinto left and we had not put a replacement in there, I think. And so different people would host it, and we're at this golf tournament, and you know, I wasn't playing this before I played golf, so I was there. We were broadcasting there, so I was producing whatever I was doing. We had just had Bill Murray on, and he stormed off. I forget what pissed him off. He stormed off the show. Something shit. We just pissed Bill Murray off. And Kellogg comes up to me and he goes, "It was like 1 o'clock," and he goes, "Hey, I need you to head back to the station." And I'm like, "All right, what's up?" And he goes, "I need you to host Primetime today."
You,
me, and I'm going. And I never hosted a show. I've done sports flashes and little things like that. And I'm like, "Dude, like, host it?" And he goes, "Yeah, I need you to host it today." And I'm like, "All right." So as I'm walking to my car, he goes, "Hey, by the way, don't use your name. Don't say it's DJ Stout." And I'm like, "All right. Well, what name do you want me to use?" He goes, "Go by Bobby Francis."
What?
True story. And I'm thinking, why the hell does he want me to go by Bobby Francis? First of all, that sounds like a Vegas freaking sleazeball. Second of all, he's giving me my chance to host my first ever show, and I can't even use your name. So I wish I had a tape of it. I hosted that day 4 hours, and it was with Dino Hackett and Ethan Horton.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I remember those guys.
And yeah. I remember like the first 20 minutes seemed like it lasted 20 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Like I was just, and luckily it was on a Monday, so we at least had football from the weekend.
Hosted during the season.
Yes, during the season.
Yeah,
thank
so at least
God.
You had stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I didn't. You didn't get thrown into
the middle of the dead period in summer and said you're going to have 5 hours of radio.
That's the funniest thing is, and I remember we used to have those every now and again. We had a contest where a listener could come in and host a segment or an hour, whatever.
Yep.
And they all thought, and I think they still do think this. Like I could go in there and do that for an hour. That's all you do is talk sports. You go through your Rolodex of stuff that you think you can get through, and you realize, I've only been on the air 4 minutes. I'm already tapped out.
Yeah.
I'm already out. I got nothing left.
It's amazing. And you know, one thing about hosting a podcast is a lot easier than hosting a radio show. And the reason is, with a podcast, you can pretty much make the structure. You can kind of go when you want, break when you want. In radio, you have to break exactly on
time.
It's live. Yeah. You've got to make sure when it's a live read, you're ready. And, you know, you've got to make sure that you're hitting your brakes. You have to make sure that you know, that you're getting the live read or what sponsors next or this segment.
There's no editing.
No.
So you might say
there's
something.
There's no do-overs. There's no let's try that again.
You might come back to break 10 minutes later.
Well, yeah, yeah.
We'll be back in 10 minutes.
Frank was great at that. That's why I went bald, I think.
That's one of the, I don't know if I've ever laughed at
him. I remember Gary Williams calling and was laughing so hard he said he almost ran his car into a bridge or something. But, yeah, so, you know, that's how FNZ started. And Mark was the technical producer at the time. And then – over the years, when we added so many different shows, I mean, we had Zabe and then he left. And then, you know, the way the morning show happened was we had a golf show on Saturday mornings that was hosted by a guy named Brett Wright. And Brett was a super good dude.
Brett Wright.
And he was the golf pro out at Lark Haven, which is no longer there. Now it's a neighborhood. But Brett gave me my first set of golf clubs when they were trying to get me to play golf. And long story short, though, Brett somehow... Or no, it was Zabin, I think.
Zabin brought Gary on his show just to talk golf.
Yeah.
Like every week.
Because Gary had been the pro at Seminole or something, you know, I think. And so Gary would come on just talking golf. And at the time. And
Gary was a very good golfer, by the way. He was like a scratch.
Oh, yeah.
One handicap, played all the time.
Great golf.
You know, I played with him a couple of times, but I didn't know how he started the radio.
Yeah. So he would, Zayman would have him come on just talking golf. And I think he worked for a telecommunication company or something as a sales guy or something. I don't remember exactly. It was something like that. So when it was time to put the morning show together, I said, you know, when Kellogg and I sat down, I said, look, man, I think this Gary Williams guy would be a really good host. Like he's very sharp. He's prepared. He knows sports. And so when we started doing auditions, we brought Gary in. Long story short, he left what his job was, became the host of the show. TC was at the time did promotions and stuff for us. We put him in there just because TC was funny as hell. Like TC was quick. He didn't really know anything about sports, which became a problem at some point. I mean,
this not even mentioning QCB.
I'll tell you that story too.
That's still to come.
Yeah. But TC was like comic relief in there. And then Selenia.
He was just a big old hick.
TC was just a guy that everybody liked. He knew everybody.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely knew.
Like everybody. TC on his driver's license, this true story. I saw it. He literally went to a costume store and got a priest outfit and went to his driver's license in a priest outfit. So on his driver's license, he was a priest. He would get upgraded on flights. Like he'd get out of tickets.
Yep, sure did.
I mean, he was just a funny dude.
Yeah. So it was Gary. It was TC and Jags, right?
Oh, TC. Jag from Boston. He was from Boston, wasn't he?
TC was originally. Yeah. He had worked with the Fox and John.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but yeah, originally.
Those were the original Jagger. Three guys on the morning sports page.
Yep. And so we did that show, and then Jagler left.
I was thinking of Hasey, not TC.
Yeah,
TC is
That's a whole, yeah. TC was just funny dude.
TC's a great dude.
Didn't know a whole lot about sports, but was a fan. And then when Jagler left, I guess it was to go to the Nationals. I think it's when I put Slaney in there. And you know, I found Slaney in the phone book. Like when we were looking for co-hosts for primetime, I was like, where's that old funny dude that was on CNC Sports? And Jim Slaney, and I'd never met him. And I'll get the phone book out, and I'll be damned. There's a Jim Slaney in the phone book, and I can still remember his number, 704-362, and I won't say the rest of it. And so I call, and he answers, and I'm like, hey, is this Jim Slaney? He goes, yeah, it is. And I'm like, hey, the Jim Slaney that was the sportscaster? Yes, it is.
In San Francisco? Where's he?
Well, he started. I mean, he was in Louisville.
San Francisco.
He was all over.
He's been all over the place.
But he had been in Charlotte. You know,
he's the original Ron Burgundy, by the way.
He is.
Yeah, absolutely.
He is. And so he didn't know anything about the radio.
Kind of important.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but I'm kind of a big deal. But he didn't know anything about the radio station. So I told him what I was wanting. I wanted him to be a co-host. He goes, let me listen to this station for a day and call me back. And he just hangs up. So I wait like a day and a half. I call him back, and I can hear the station on in the background. Come to find out over the years, he would listen to it in his garage while he was doing whatever the hell he was doing. I mean, he would paint or, I mean,
he was drinking a beer.
Drinking Coors Light.
Yeah.
So we bring him in, and you mentioned Vinny's earlier. We start, you know, Kellogg wanted us to get the show out on the road, right? We wanted everybody, no one knew who we were. And I forgot an important piece of this that was awkward. When Kellogg took over and we named ourselves WFNZ, whatever, he said we needed like a logo or a mascot or something. So he comes up with a bulldog no one even remembers this. So he then trades out a 36-foot RV.
The big unit, which became
the big unit, which there's a whole lot of stories
on that thing.
And we get the big unit, and he gets it wrapped, and he wraps it with this bulldog with the Fox logo, the Harry Fox with the guitar, and the bulldog's got the Fox over his knee, and he snaps the guitar over his knee. That was the whole damn side of the big unit. And then when we got
used to take that to the old Coliseum.
We took it everywhere.
You'd park that right outside.
Yeah,
I remember coming on the big unit before going into some of the old Hornets games.
Oh, we'd have listeners come have
beer. There was a Saturday morning. I saw my life flash before my eyes. We're heading to Knoxville. The Southern Fried Football
team. Yeah.
We're going up to Knoxville to see, I think, Tennessee and Florida.
It was me, Matt Wilson. Yeah, I remember that game.
So
it was a triple overtime game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was a great game. We saw some great games. So we're coming down 74 into Shelby. And if you know what that,
yep.
there's that hill that you go down right before you get into Shelby.
Yep.
You go down that hill, then you got to go back uphill. Packer must have been going 80 on 74. We get down that hill, and I'm literally thinking, well, this is it. It's over.
Yeah.
This is how it's going to end on the big unit. I thought we were dead.
Pac-Man drove that thing like it was a mini Cooper.
Well, I remember driving up to App State a couple times with him up that mountain. and it didn't go fast up, but it damn sure came fast down. Well,
eventually, we hired a driver, Houston. Remember,
yes.
We had him drive.
Oh boy!
So he wouldn't drink, and we would all do our thing. And
see, I think really, if we want to be honest with people that are listening right now, they want to hear the stories of what happened in the big unit.
Yeah. That's a different series.
That was after dark.
Yeah. And I don't even know if I can tell some of them, man.
You have to run a disclaimer before that show airs. Yeah. So you got to be over.
If I spy with my little eyes, can see and tell.
We went to NASCAR races and sat. I mean, I'll tell you one funny story about the big unit.
I'm a doctor.
We take the big unit.
I'm a breast doctor.
That wasn't me doing that, by the way. But I'll tell you one quick story about the big unit that's funny. And I wish I would have saved the letter that I got. But we would take the big unit to all the NASCAR races. And Scott Cooper out at the Speedway would give us a parking pass right by Victory Lane. So we had the Mac Daddy area. And then Ryan Register, who now is the proud owner of McCoy Smokehouse and Saloon, they have their 18th anniversary going on right now. So congratulations to them. But Ryan ran the men's club at the time, and they were sponsors of FNZ. And so Ryan and I,
they had a great buffet, by the way.
They did on Wednesday.
Real mashed potatoes.
Real mashed potatoes. We'd go every Wednesday.
From what I've heard.
Yeah. Allegedly.
So I've been told.
Yeah. So we would go there every Wednesday, and Ryan and I became good buddies because we would do a lot with those guys. And so Ryan would bring the chef from the men's club, all kinds of food. And I'm talking like steak and shrimp. I mean, and then all the booze. And then he would bring three or four girls that worked with him that, you know, just to give them like a nice little off. And then I would bring a few of my buddies, and my dad came to several of them. And then Pac-Man would come to a couple of them. But, you know, Pac would come and he may leave, you know, during the race, wherever. We would stay the duration. And we're there one year, and it's a party, man. I mean, these girls that Ryan brought were very popular amongst the infield, and it's just a party. We're on top of the RV. People are throwing us Jello shots. I mean, it was a damn party. And so we get back to work on Monday, and I think it was Tuesday. I'm going through my mail Tuesday or Wednesday, and there's a letter from NASCAR, and I open it and I read it, and it starts off, you know, Mr. Stout, it's come to our attention that some patrons that accompanied you to the race this weekend in Charlotte were exposing themselves on pit lane during the race.
What?
And we just want you to know that if this were to happen again, we would revoke your credentials.
So hey, just came down pit lane. Why are you coming back? Oh, I got a dirty windshield. He's cleaning.
Well, I honestly did not.
Was it a distraction to the drivers?
Well, it was a distraction to the pit crew. And I never knew that they were doing this. So I call Ryan and I'm like, dude, I just got this letter from NASCAR. I really didn't know that they were doing that. I knew that they may have been doing that elsewhere, but I didn't know that during the damn race, while guys are changing tires on these cars, these girls were taking their boobs out and putting them up against the fence on pit row. And so I vetted out to make sure it really did happen, and it 100% did. So I had to, you know, I think it was Mike Helton that I had to call and just say, look, I'm sorry, here's what happened, won't happen again. And so I, not that I stopped taking the strippers with us on future trips, I just made sure
they just became part of the golf tournament.
Discreet.
Yeah. Oh, they just became part of the golf tournament.
Yeah, I just folded them into the FNZ golf tournament.
Moved them over to 12 instead of
pit road. Yeah, the big unit was a good time. But yeah, when he put that logo on there, and then he drove it over to the Fox right away, right to their building so they could see it. And you know, me and Mark, a lot of us had a lot of good friends that were still there. And he picked the fight right away, which was kind of the mentality that was perfect for me, and then ended up being perfect for all the guys that worked there. I mean, we were a competitive bunch of dudes, and the first guy on the list that I wanted to fucking beat was Jerry Valancourt.
Mm-hmm.
I was still very bitter about the way he left us. It was the
first. We wiped him right off the map.
I mean, it didn't take us. He had a big 50,000 watt great signal, and Pack and I with Primetime came in there, and all the co-hosts. I mean, we had all the, you know, again,
I remember that was Pac's kind of battle cry.
That was our first objective.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do it with a 5,000 watt signal that dropped to 2,500 when it got dark.
Yep.
So, you know, 525 at night to 7, you really couldn't hear us in a lot of areas.
South Charlotte, you couldn't.
And the way the ratings work were from 3 to 7. So we would always say, you know, we're fighting with 5,000 watts behind our back or 45,000 watts behind our back. And so I remember when we first started beating them, we were like, holy crap, man. Like, we're beating WBT, a guy named Jerry Valancourt, who's been in the market. It's got a 50,000 watt signal, and we just proceeded to.
It was really guy sports talk radio.
And Jerry, listen, Jerry had a good show too. But yeah, Jerry had his stick and all that. But you know, recipes like Mark said, Jerry is a name that will always be known for sports radio in this town. But when we did start beating him pretty consistently, is when I think we all started going, damn, maybe we got something here. And then we kept building on that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had Jim Cutler as our voice guy. And then on primetime, we started, you know, we were using co-hosts from the Charlotte Observer, like Stan Olson.
And you're probably in what years right now? Like the 90s?
This is probably mid-90s, late 90s?
This is late 90s. Yeah. Really, when we, you know, started probably hitting the stride over there. And it just, the production sounded big.
Yep.
It was a 5,000 watt station, but it sounded it was big time.
I mean,
Jim Cutler's voice. Yep.
Well, Charlotte wasn't a real big town back then.
Frank, I know you've heard this, but before the Hornets got here and before you guys got here, it was NASCAR and it was wrestling.
Yep. Yep.
That was it. That was the extent of Charlotte sports.
Yep.
And you saw Ric Flair or Ricky Steamboat or, you know, Tully Blanchard or Arn Anderson, whatever, you'd see them out. You might see a NASCAR driver out, but there was no Frank Garcias or Kerry Collins or, you know,
Wesley Wall.
You know, there wasn't anybody to look at. It was
Kevin Grains,
your extent.
Matter of fact, sports. I remember athletes. When we started bringing athletes in, I remember one of the first ones that we started bringing in quite a bit was David Wesley, who played for the Hornets. Yeah. Great player, by the way, very underrated. And Bobby Phils would do stuff with us. And one of the stories that I wanted to touch on today, because it's one that I remember vividly, was the day that Bobby Phils passed away.
Yeah.
And I was sitting next to Mark and I was screening calls.
It was right, Chuck and Jim show, Howard and Salania's show.
Yep. With Chuck Howard, by the way, Sauce Monkey Liquor Store in Fort Mill. It's awesome. And he's going to come on the show too. I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He's been listening and enjoying it. But we're sitting there and I'm screening calls as usual. And Mark's sitting next to me and I get a call on the hotline and I answer it. And it was John DeLong, who worked for the Winston-Salem Journal at the time, but he would come on our show all the time. And JD goes, "Hey man, I'm just leaving Hornets practice and something's happened. I don't know what it is, but there's like five or six Hornet players standing on the side of the road, Eldon Campbell," he named them. "And there's a car accident. It's a Porsche and a taxi. But I don't know who the players are yet, but something bad's happened." And then he called back a little bit after that. We started getting calls from listeners saying something bad. And then JD called back and I get chills just thinking about it now. And he said, "Hey, it was Bobby Phils and he's passed away." And I mean, I remember the show, obviously,
DOA
just turns a whole different way there. And because everybody loved Bobby Phils.
And that's the thing. Obviously, you guys know this about live radio is, things can change on a dime. And you could be talking about something oblivious and you're laughing and all that.
An earthquake happens.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I were on the air when an earthquake hit Charlotte of all places.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny you bring that up, DJ, because I was thinking about that for some reason the other day about
9/11 happens.
Yeah. I mean, just.
Well, 9/11. I'll tell you, I remember that. But I was driving down 77 and we were doing Del Curry's bowling tournament.
Yeah, we're at George Pappas Lane.
Yeah. And I remember it was probably 9:15 and I'm almost there. And Mark calls me from the studio and he goes, "Hey man, did you see this thing about a plane running into the World Trade Center?" I'm like, "No, what happened? What kind of plane?" And Mark goes, "I don't know at the time." He didn't know what kind of plane it was. Nobody knew. He goes, "But evidently a plane ran into the World Trade Center." So, all right. He didn't know the details yet. I get to the bowling alley and everybody there, Del Curry, all that, Vince Carter, they're all around the TVs in the little bar area watching. And that's when they're starting to figure out. And then bam, the second tower gets hit and we're all at George Pappas Lanes. I still have two bowling pins somewhere in my house that were autographed that day by all the athletes. And they just got left behind because, you know, at that point we went from being a sports station to being Dr. Phil,
a news station.
Yeah.
We were reporting what was happening. The first call I got was from Mike Cranston over at Metro. He said, "Hey, a plane just went in the World Trade Center." I was like, "What?" So I turned on
you were back
in the studio.
Yeah, you
were. I wasn't out at the Pappas Lane. I was back in the studio.
Yeah.
So I turned on the TV immediately. And immediately, as soon as I turned on the television, I see the second plane live go into the World Trade Center. And I was like, this is not coincidence. There's something. This is terrorism. Something's going on. And our show became therapeutic. It became a news outlet because the rest of the day, I know we went to news for a while.
Yeah.
And then Pat came back on and we just took calls.
Yeah.
People crying, didn't know
we
what
had loaded lines.
Yeah, we
it
just,
would it would have been as if it was the Panthers just made it was therapy. We had loaded lines.
That's what sports. I mean, obviously, you know, having done radio as like you guys have, is that that's what sports radio was became here in Charlotte. Anyways, was you know guys having the ability to call in and.
Events,
get away from all their personal problems.
Well, you remember I used to tell you guys, you've heard 100%. It a million times. I'd say, listen,
don't shit on the Hornets, don't shit on the Panthers.
Why did they don't shit on them?
No, don't. But remember, this is where people come.
Yeah,
to be we're their therapists.
Yeah, I would tell you guys 100 times. Listen,
yep,
the guys that are listening to this station probably hate their jobs. Their kids are probably driving them nuts. Their wife's probably on their ass about everything. And they come to us to get away from that. So when you sit there and tell them that their favorite team sucks and their quarterback sucks and their favorite basketball team sucks, they're leaving. They're coming to get away from that. Not that we're not going to criticize, because I was always a proponent of we've got to keep
it real.
Let's
be honest. Let's be fair.
But let's also always understand. Give a little light at the tunnel at the end of the tunnel, because if you don't, they're going to leave. And we did it for the most part. I think over all those years, we did a pretty good job of doing that. Because I certainly didn't want to go to where we didn't criticize, because that was boring radio. So I just wanted to always give a light.
You lose credibility if you don't.
Exactly. And so
I remember some of those meetings that we'd have, Yarbs, with you and I, and us criticizing the Hornets or the Panthers. And, you know, they were a little bit, some organizations were a little bit more sensitive than others.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've got more than one email.
I mean, there's nothing.
Could you guys cut us a little bit of slack?
Yeah. There's nothing more to me that stands out when Jordan took over as the owner here for the Bobcats or the Hornets, excuse me. And Pac was doing his show and the guy would call in as Jordan.
MJ.
And
I think his real name was Terry, and I think he was a driver for like
FedEx. It was absolutely one of my favorite skits at WFNZ. And you, I mean, obviously you got the phone call.
Well, first of all, I think his name was Terry. He was fantastic.
He was awesome.
Coach K, Hulk Hogan. And so he would come on the show, and for 15 minutes, it was just hilarious. But he would come on as MJ, and Pac-Man would he loved giving the Hornets crap, for number one, because they weren't good, and number two, Jordan wouldn't come on the show.
That's number one.
And we
that's number one. Well, that's number one.
You know, and look, Pac had a valid point. You know, we were the big sports station. We were who everyone listened to, and he was a new owner of the team, and we just thought we even said we'll send questions and whatever the case may be, but he never came on, and so Pac certainly didn't like that.
There's two things, but there's three things Pac didn't like. One was the Charlotte Observer. Two was the fact that Jordan wouldn't come on. Three was the fact that Jerry Richardson wouldn't come on.
Yeah, the Jerry thing was another
that put,
battle.
That put you know, a lot of venom in him with, you know, those three things. I know.
Well,
he said it most of the days.
Yeah. I mean, look, because we were competitive, and at the time we thought we were the place to be. And if you want to reach the people who are coming to your games, come on the show. So it would be frustrating if they didn't come on. But you know, the one thing that I forget where I was going.
The Jordan guy.
Oh, yeah. So the guy would do the voice as well. I think I just got the Hornet play-by-play deal. I think I just got it. I'd worked so hard to get that damn deal. It was like the big first time we've had a professional team. And they hated the MJ guy, because Pac would have him. I mean, the one that stopped the whole thing, because I told Fred Whitfield that all right, look,
who is the president?
We'll
of
stop
the
it. We'll stop that. And so I told Pac and them to stop it. Well, literally, it's like 5:55. I'm walking on to the baseball field to coach my son baseball. So we have 5 minutes till game time, and my phone rings, and it's the Hornets. It's the Hornets number. And I go, oh, shit. I hadn't been listening to the show, because I've been, you know,
damn, baseball. Damn.
And Fred Whitfield, who legitimately is one of the best dudes you'll ever meet.
Really,
I
mean, is.
One of the smartest guys, one of the nicest guys, a great business guy. I mean, he
had a great career.
Yeah, I mean, just huge for what the Hornets are to this. I mean, just a great dude.
Brother Charles, we worked with.
Brother Charles, yeah.
Just as good.
Just as good guy. But I answered the phone, and it was Fred. And I don't think I even got a word in for 2 minutes. He was wearing me out about this MJ guy. So I said, Fred, I'm at the baseball field. Let me look into this, and I'll hit you back. So I called to find out what happened, and it was the day of the draft or the day before the draft. I think it was the day of the draft, I think. And Pack had MJ come on and act as if he was golfing and had no idea the draft was that night.
I remember. It's funny you say this. I remember exactly where I was at when this came on, because I stopped. I almost had to pull off the road. And I remember you telling us, if you don't want to leave your car, then don't have them on, because those are the guys you want as guests. And this guy, he kept me in my car.
Yep.
Waiting to hear what he was going to say.
Yeah, I used to say, if it's not going to make you late for a meeting, that's then right. The guests ain't worth having on.
That's right.
And he was great. So anyway, I had to call Pac-Man, and he never came on again. But boy, Fred was so mad.
Well, the funny thing with Pac, he's kind of like Howard Stern. You can't do this. You can't do that. And you better not do this. Well, guess what Pac was going to do first?
Do it more.
Yeah. He was going to do the one thing you told him, you better not do that. Right? He was going to figure out a way to not really kind of do exactly what you was told not to do, but he was going to definitely push the envelope to skirt up.
And then that's what made him, you know, great. I mean, I got phone calls from a lot of people, you know, that were because of things that happened on that show that weren't supposed to happen. And I mean, there was a handicapper named Brandon Lang, if you remember him. I think they made a movie after him.
We talked to him at the Super Bowl.
I think he had a crush on me.
Well, he would come
Two
on.
Two for the Money is the movie, by the way. McConaughey played.
Yeah, and he came on, and I think he came on. Pac hated handicappers. He hated them.
Oh,
he didn't want them on a show. He thought they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. I mean, Pac would do bits with dartboards where he would throw darts and put his dart throwing against the...
Well, he would put QCB, the kiss of death.
Which Q had the worst record in history ever.
QCB was arguably the greatest handicapper I've ever seen. And when I say that, he was one of those guys you fade. If you're a handicapper, you know that's what you do. Whatever he picked, you bet against him, because he had, I think, some incredible record where he missed like 3 out of 100. He got 3 right out of 100.
I think
he
missed 97 Super Bowl more recently than he has won a pick. Right. And Pac loved that. And Brandon Lang, I don't remember if we forced him on the show or I forget what the damn deal was, but I do remember same thing. It was like 7:30 at night. And this is when I lived in Monroe. And if you remember, I built a batting cage in my backyard. So I'm in the backyard with like my boys and some of their buddies throwing baseball to them. And my cell phone rings and it's Brandon Lang. And same kind of thing, man. He's wearing me out. And the only words I can make out are curse words, lawsuit, suing you, lawyer, blah, 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 blah. And he is wearing me out. And Brandon and I got along great.
He was like that, huh?
Well, he was pissed because Pac-Man, I forget what he said, but Pac dumped all over him, like just dumped all over him. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was whatever it was. Brandon and I always got along great. He was a super good dude with me. I always liked him. And so he was mad. So, I mean, I had to call attorneys and I could tell you a million of those late night phone calls, but that's what made that show great is you never knew what you're going to get. I mean, whether it was the Weiner line, I mean, the co-host that day, you know, there was always one co-host that seemed was going to say something that Pac was going to be able to turn into him getting his ass whipped the whole show. You know, one co-host was going to say one thing that Pac knew he was going to be able to hold on to and that the listeners were going to wear him out. And whether it be Darren Gant or, I mean, you could go through the years of really who got hammered the most. But
I don't know what it was with Pac and I always thought I was going to be that guy. You know, we started co-hosting together. We're not co-hosting, but I would come on once a week. You know, after I retired and I was here and you know, I kind of wanted to, you know, I enjoyed talking. I enjoyed arguing. I enjoyed Shocker. Debating. Yeah, right. But
debating is what you really like.
You know, playing devil's advocate, disagreeing, fighting, whatever, bickering, arguing, whatever you want to call it. But I always thought I was going to – Pac never, at least, you know, to my face, never really got on my case
Pac respected the athletes. I mean, you know, we did every Super Bowl for however many years, 15 years. And the
Tampa Bay,
when we would broadcast from the Super Bowl, and Mark, I don't remember if you ever got to go to one.
No, I never did. The only Super Bowl I ever got to was 50 out in San Francisco.
Okay.
And I was, you know, we were doing the show.
Yeah. Cause Mark was the guy that ran the board back in the studio.
He was important. He was so important.
I was so good. They couldn't afford.
But seriously, if Mark wasn't on the board when we were doing these shows, all hell would break loose. So Mark was always, we had to keep him back at the studio, but the Super Bowl weeks for me anyway, even when I was a program director and operations manager, I would go with the show and I would produce for the most part. Now we had some, I think Daniel Norwood eventually he would go do it. Hitman would do it. But for the first few years, I would do it. And that's a hell of a week, man, because there's 50 radio shows
radio there.
You're fighting with all these other producers that are wanting the same guests as you do. And if I'm not coming back with these guys, I mean, we'd be doing the show, and if two tables down, Pac-Man saw Bill Romanowski or somebody, and I didn't get him on the show, Pac would be freaking pissed.
Oh, yeah.
So the stress of and you know, he knew I was busting my ass, but still, I didn't want to disappoint. And we always would get the best guys. I mean, I would knock guys out of the way. And then eventually we started getting a reputation where people knew who we were. They knew we were FNZ. We were an ESPN affiliate. And when I would play hotel bingo, like Mark was talking about earlier, when I would call hotels trying to get guys on the phone, which I always seem to have pretty good luck doing, I would always say, I'm DJ from ESPN Radio. I would never say FNZ in Charlotte because they didn't know who the hell we were. But when I said ESPN, even though that was kind of misleading, they knew who that was, you know? And so
I use that trick today.
Yeah. You should. I followed your lead. You should.
That's what I do.
Absolutely.
That's on our show.
Damn right. And it worked, you know? And so at the Super Bowl, it would wear you out. I mean, it's nonstop. And then, you know, when everyone else would go to bed, I would not. So I would just going out with these athletes at night. And then Pac would go. I remember one night, me and Pac were in a limousine with Howie Long, Chris Myers, Dino Hackett, Ethan Horton, and I want to say Ronnie Lott. And
that's going to be a book someday. It should.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dino and Ethan played with the Raiders, I believe, when Howie was there. Yep. And then Dino knew those guys somehow. I don't remember. So Pac and I are in this limousine, you know, and we were going somewhere on South Beach. I forget, the Cleveland or wherever the hell we were going. And I'm still a young kid. I mean, I'm probably 30. I don't even know if I had my first son, Dylan, yet. I mean, I was young. And I'm sitting there going, dude, like, I didn't say a word. I'm just listening to these guys talk, you know, and they were just being their normal selves. They were all great, but we got to do that quite a bit. And, you know, I think Pac always, and maybe this had something to do with, you know, Pac being around his dad, Billy, all those years. So, you know, and Billy being around all these athletes and Pac having exposure to all that. Pac always understood that whole, that there was a respect that you give these athletes. There's a privacy that you give them. And Pac knew when to push him. I mean, don't get me. There was days where I thought Dino and Ethan wanted to kill Pac-Man. There's days when you know, I'm sure I could name five or six more easy when Pac would get on their ass. I mean, but you know, Ray Farmer, you know, Ray was like you. Ray wanted to argue about every damn thing. You know, and Ray and I were good buddies. Ray lived right behind me at the time.
He became the GM of pro personnel.
Well, he was with the Chiefs. He was with the Browns.
Yeah, and he was with the Chiefs and the Falcons. I'm not sure where he is. Ray was a super smart dude, man. Super smart guy. You know, went to Duke but you know, when we would do those shows at the Super Bowl, we always had athletes with us. And it was great for us because if you were sitting there, or whether it be Dino or Ethan or whoever we took over the years, these other athletes they played with would see them and would come do the show because of that. Like, I think I want to say that maybe you had Emmitt Smith.
Yep.
This might have been the Super Bowl 50 when I was no longer with FNZ. But, you know, it really did help when we had these athletes with us because the brotherhood that they had. And Pac understood that. You know, he got it. And
We've had some great guests over the years. Oh, obviously, you know, I mean, who of radio or who's who of the NFL. And
I mean, we had, going even back to the Matt Pinto show, I used to have the Crocodile Hunter on. Remember, I would call there the Australian number. I just called the zoo one day and I'll be damned. They gave me him on the phone. And this is when he was at the height of his fame, and we would have him on all the damn time. I still have his number in my Rolodex. And so we would, we had all, you know, we had
boxers. You had boxers on.
Pac was buddies with, the guitar player from Pearl Jam, Jeff Avant.
Jeff Avant. Yeah.
And Pac knew him somehow from a Final Four along the way. We did, you know, James Brown, you know, came in there and loved the barbecue.
Jeff Avant. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we did, man. We had great guests, and Pac just understood that whole flow, and you didn't want to get on this. You didn't want to be his target where he was going to come at you. Cause he was really good at it. Trust me. I was on that target side quite a bit. Nobody was on that, I think, more than Hitman, who deserved 88% of it. But no, that Pac-Man, you know, to this day, and he still does a great job on ACC Network. But, you know, back to the morning show that Mark brought up earlier, when we started that, I remember I had to get to work every day at 5 a.m. The show started at 6, but because I was the boss now, Kellogg wanted me there and through the pre-show meeting. And so I'd get up at 4 in the morning. I remember I had a black Honda Accord. I remember the Goo Goo Dolls album had just CD had just come out with whatever one with Black Balloon or whatever. Yeah. I'd listen to that the whole way to work, get there. We do our meeting. We go in there, we do the show, and then we'd have a post meeting show. And then Jagler left to take the national. Jagger was the FNZ just till he got a play by play job. Like if they make guys, they do. There's guys who all they want to be in life is a play by play guy. And Jagger was that dude. He went to Syracuse. You know, he did whether it was UNC Charlotte.
Voice of the 49ers, obviously.
49ers, the Knights. Yep. I mean, still to this day, one of the most famous calls I remember when it comes to UNC Charlotte was against Cincinnati. Yeah. You know, with that.
What a bunch of thugs.
Yeah. When Dave said that.
Sit on the air.
Yep. And so, and so when he left, we had to figure out who to put in his place. And we knew the show needed some more fun element to it because TC would be funny sometimes, but there'd also be times where, especially when Slania was on the show, there would be times where I would get a text from the producer or Mark or Gary, and I would literally walk to the studio and Gary and Jim would be talking and TC would be sitting back with his feet up on the table reading the newspaper. And it was his AJ Brown way of saying, if you ain't gonna use me, then I'm gonna read the paper. Whereas AJ Brown's reading a book.
Yeah.
And so eventually that got old and we knew we had to make budget cuts, which was a damn monthly thing on FNZ. We had, you know, if they needed to save money, we were the ones that they came for. And we, you know, cause
this is where you got Gary and Selenia.
Yeah. And then that show took off, you know, and again,
prime well, time. I tell you what, you know, I've coming on the show at 10 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, DJ giving me the 5 hours that I had, I knew how much time he had to prepare. I always respected the hell out of those morning guys because they didn't have, you know, they could prepare the night before, but there was also the things that popped up that they could really go and hit on the spot. And I remember your Gary, you know, being probably one of the most prepared guys that I've ever listened to.
No doubt.
You know, coming in, and I learned so much. You know, with stats and with numbers and with people and, you know, and Selenia was such a good, you know, kind of Robin to hit Batman.
Yep.
That they played off. And then Yarbs would come in and whatever they didn't have, he would provide. So it was just a perfect blend of, you know, stats and knowledge and fun. And it worked.
The thing that Gary did great, he did everything you just said, but the one thing that he was great at was keeping that show on the road because there's times where Slaney would go off on tangents and they'd be funny as hell, but there'd be times where it was time to get back to where we're going. And Gary, in the middle of laughing his ass off of whatever Slaney was doing, was very good at going, all right, let's get back on track here. Let's get back to where, let's get back on time. Let's get where we're going here. And he was great at doing that. And when Gary came to my office to tell me that he was leaving, to go to satellite radio, because we had him under contract, so we let him out of the contract just because it was the right thing to do. It was a big move. It was when satellite radio was just blowing up, and so it was a great opportunity.
Well, you guys weren't. I mean, the whole station wasn't about holding people down. It was about building people up. It's like a good coach. You want your assistants to do better than you, as well as you, so they can go get their head job.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say to you as it means that we were almost like the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like we're gonna grow the talent, and then the Yankees are gonna come take them.
Yeah.
You know, and or now the Dodgers, God almighty.
Yeah.
You know, Mark and I could do a whole 5-hour baseball show, but you know, we did. I mean, if you look at where a lot of these guys that work for us are now, I mean, whether it be John Mita Perel, who was our first original Flash guy, and you know, John, I remember when Kellogg brought him in from Boston, he weighed about 110 pounds, nerdiest looking dude you ever seen in your life. You know, like pocket protector kind of dude. And I'm thinking to myself, what is this dude? He's supposed to be funny for like 2 minutes twice a day.
Well, and you want to talk about guys you thought were going to get killed by somebody.
Yeah.
I thought for sure Jason Peter, who played for, was going to kill John Mita Perel.
And
really? I literally thought he was going to kill him.
He wrote a book about, I think it afterwards.
Well, he killed Jason Peter. And Jason Peter came on our show on Thursdays at Vinny's. So Jason would come on the show every Thursday, and we did. I mean, Mita Perel would go after him. There was times where Jason would just kind of go, all right,
All right. Was he intentionally trying to rile him up?
His job, Media Pro's job, was to do what QCB ended up doing. His job was to piss everybody off. And he's a brilliant writer.
Poke him and poke him.
And he would just go after everybody. And he was a brilliant writer. So the stuff he would do was very smart, but he
was calculated.
He would wear these dudes out. And so when he came to my office to let me know that he was moving back to Boston to do stuff with Boston College, and which he still does, and we didn't know what we were going to do at that position, and it had become a big part. Like we put him in there before the 20 break. I think he went in at 17 on 417 and 517, if I'm not mistaken.
And he did a hockey segment that became famous. Like one of the most popular segments on that station at the time.
Well, yeah, and we're talking what, early 2000s, right? Like late 90s, early 2000s.
This is when we had moved
98, 99
back into the 4th Street.
Yes.
So we were back in the 4th Street studios, but now it was just FNZ. So it was that was we had like a basketball goal, and I think we were like Barstool Sports before Barstool Sports. but you know, I lost my train of thought again. What we were just talking about with Gary.
His ability to get things back on.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was great at the. Oh, I know, when John Media Perrell left.
Yeah.
See, I'm getting old. I sell this medicine I'm taking from my freaking back. But when Media Perrell left, we didn't have anybody to put in that spot. And so I was listening to tapes and trying to find who could come in here and really be funny as hell, but also do all the other stuff John did. John also was a great play-by-play guy and all that. And we had this intern and this kid named Tremaine, who I hired as an intern, and he had been working for the city. And his job was to basically ride around on golf carts, and he would put those wires across the street that you see when they're calculating the traffic, how many people are coming through this intersection. So Tremaine, that was his job. So he would do that, and then he would come intern for FNZ. And we had him do stuff like, you know, he would pull the whiners from the wire line to play back, and, you know, whatever he would do. Well, there was this whiner at the time that would call in, and he called himself the Queen City Bastard. And I think Pat made it short for QCB, and the dude was just hilarious. And he kind of did what Media Perrell did. He would just come on and he would just dump all over the Panthers, the Hornets, whatever it was, but he was funny as hell. And so one day Tremaine walks into my office and he goes, Hey, Suit, you know, you listen to Wireline, you know, the last few weeks. I'm like, yeah. He goes, you hear that guy, Queen City Bastard? I'm like, yeah, dude, he's hilarious. And he goes, that's me. And I said, what do you mean that's you? And he goes, that's me. And I said, what do you mean? I said, do it right now. And he started doing it. And I'm like, so you just like go hide somewhere and do those calls every day? He goes, yeah. And I went, all right. So he wanted Media Perrell's job. And so Pac-Man and I talked about it. We ended up giving it to him.
Brilliant.
But for the first probably, I would say, 3 or 4 months, Pac-Man and I wrote damn near everything he said, because he was funny as hell, but he didn't have the cadence. Like when you write that stuff, especially when you've got 3 minutes to get in and out and be funny. So Pac-Man and I would help him. Plus, it was also sometimes he would want to say stuff and we'd be like, nope, you're not saying that. And so anyway, after 3 or 4 months, he kind of got the hang of it. And then, you know, we called him QCB, and the rest is history with him. You know, he was hilarious.
He has some of the greatest segments probably on WFNZ history. The Love Doctor.
Yeah.
The CIAA legends.
Yeah.
You know, some of the other things that he's done have been hysterical, but the Love Doctor with QCB, because
And also when Pac would just
the hot dogs on the back of his neck.
Pac would wear him out about the Cowboys. I mean,
the hot dogs too.
Yeah, the hot dogs, and then Pac would start. I mean, Pac started the whole how many days it's been since the Cowboys have won a playoff game or whatever it was. But yeah, Q is an intern, and really we hired a lot of interns over the years. I mean, Tom Riley, who produced the morning show for quite a while, was an intern that we hired in. T-Bone, you know, Travis Hancock, who's still there now. I mean, Mark saw everybody go through that radio station. And then he saw, kind of to jump ahead, then he saw when it got sold. So, you know, when FNZ got sold, it was 2015, 14.
Yeah, I can tell you when it got sold, because that's kind of when my tenure and my whole life changed when that last sale happened.
It was what, 2016? Yeah, so
right after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I left in 17 in May. So
I'm driving home again one day, and I get a call from a buddy of mine who was in the radio business, and he said, hey, man, you know, FNZ's getting sold. And I'm like, what do you mean FNZ's getting sold? And he goes, I got it from a really good source that it's getting sold, and it's going to go over to Cumulus, which is WBT and all those stations. And I'm like, who told you this? And the guy tells me, and So I go in the next day and I ask my boss, who at the time was a guy named Bill Shaning, is FNZ getting sold? And he goes, ah, no, it's not getting sold. I don't know who told you that, whatever. He couldn't say a word, right? It was still being done. So he couldn't say a word. I don't even know if he knew that it was 100%. But anyway, fast forward however many days, and then I find out they bring me in and tell me they are selling it. And the owner of the company of Beasley says, we're selling it, but...
Well, we were before Beasley, we were CBS.
Correct.
And Beasley bought us.
And then that's who
sold. And then, yeah, that's who they sold it to.
And the owner of Beasley calls me and says, look, we're selling FNZ. I know that's your station, but we're not letting you go with them. We want you to stay with WSOC, because I was running all the country stations for Beasley at the time. And so I remember that meeting was the hardest meeting. When I remember we had a golf tournament that day somewhere.
And I remember you coming in and kind of, you know, calling us all in that room.
Well, I called a meeting for 4 o'clock in the afternoon, yeah. Which I never did meetings at 4 o'clock. Right. I always did them in the morning.
No, you guys were already gone by then.
Yeah. All right, Pat. I did play at a golf tournament that day. And I remember during the tournament, I got sauced up pretty good, because I knew that what I was going to have to do was gonna be really, really
hard. Well, I remember you having a conversation with me, you know, on the side, you know, and really, literally, you know, I'm going to blow your cover a little bit. As hard on the outside you are is probably as big a heart that you have. And I don't know how many times you probably saved Yarb's job, my job, you know, a lot of the other guys' jobs there, just fighting for us, you know, at that station, because... you know, we were always kind of the throw in, and didn't have the numbers to go with it, but it was your baby and you started this, and you and Yarbs, and you'd been through this from day one and calling us in there. It was hard for you to kind of communicate what, you know, the emotions you were going through. And, you know, this is where you really started off and, you know, becoming, you know, one of the best producers and, you know, TV or radio guys in the country with country music. And it was really hard for you to call us in.
It was, that was a hard meeting. And, you know, I remember when we walked out of there, everyone had questions. And I remember too, that everyone had to go over to WBT to meet the new ownership group or whatever. And for whatever reason, the owner of Beasley wanted me to be there. And so I didn't want to go because I was pissed they sold the station. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go see this welcome party for what I looked as my baby. You know, I also wanted to make sure that all my guys were going to be okay. So I put in phone calls to the head of sports programming for Cumulus. I talked to the GM over there all before this to make sure that my guys were going to be okay. Cause right. I didn't, you know, a lot of times when you have ownership change, just in any business, they whack a lot of people.
Like they did with Kellogg.
Well, Kellogg left on his own.
No. When Kellogg came in,
oh, yeah, whacked everything. Yeah, exactly. And so I was there at BT for this big meeting. All my guys are there. And then the head of sports programming, somebody asked the question. I don't know if you remember this, Mark, but somebody asked the head of sports programming, well, who's going to be the program director? And the guy goes, well, we're still working on that, but we're hoping that it's DJ Stout. Now, I'm sitting there, and it made it almost sound like I had not told the truth to you guys, because I told you that I wasn't coming, and they weren't allowing me out of the contract. And even if they would, it was smarter for me to stay where I was, because I was making my name in the country stuff. And so after that meeting, everyone's asking me, dude, are you going to be the PD? And I'm like, I have no idea. So I get back to the station. I'm like, hey, I thought you said I wasn't going. And they said, dude, this is in the contracts. I don't know where the mix up was, but people, you know, that made me really mad, that it almost sounded like I wasn't being forthcoming, which you guys always know. I was always transparent with everything. And, but then, yeah, I couldn't listen to FNZ. I probably listened maybe the first week that it wasn't mine anymore, but I had a really hard time listening from that point on. And even to this day, you
know that feeling.
Yeah, exactly. And even to this day, you know, like I still listen to Mark, and I own a marketing company, right? So I spend money at all the radio stations, including FNZ, and they do a great job. And we spent money on Mark's station. And so, you know, sports radio here, is as big as it's ever been now, with two stations, mm-hmm. and they both have, you know, FM, all this stuff, FM. So, but yeah, I couldn't listen. And now I can listen more, but it's usually wrapped around a client that I have on there that I need to make sure is getting what they need to be getting. There's still a hole that, you know, FNZ you know, when we started there was nothing, and to build something and then have it sold, you have no say in the matter. Mm-hmm. Oh, it sucked. And it was, it just, you know, and that changed the game. I mean, Selenia, when I wasn't going to over there, he retired, you know, the, and then obviously when over, when you guys got over there, a lot of things changed.
Oh yeah, they did. And I mean, by the way, whoever told you that, that everybody was going to be good, we weren't all good.
No, I understand.
It didn't end well.
It did not. You know, and it they changed a lot of things, and you know, radio. The one thing about FNZ that no one really understood, and I would fight this battle with corporate. I mean, I remember fighting this battle with Mel Karmazon when I was trying to get us an FM signal. And if one of our FM signals had like three shitty books in a row, I was banging everybody. We need that station. Give me that signal. Give me that signal. But the one thing that people never really understood about FNZ that really was a huge issue was we were the most expensive radio station in that building. I ran
from payroll standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, I ran WSOC, which was number one damn near all the time. And it cost me double to run FNZ because we had to have so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And so as
talent they, fees, payroll, you're paying. Yeah,
and plus we had live programming from 6A to 7P, which I would never give up on, even when we would have cuts.
And you had to have people like running the board.
You couldn't
automate it.
Right.
I mean,
right. You
had to have live people who had to get paid.
Exactly.
To come in and work.
And they used to give me hell that, well, DJ, you don't believe in having a show with just one person. And I'm like, no, I really don't. I think it's boring. I think you need to have co-hosts on there so they can debate and whatever. And so, you know, the trickle down effect started happening. We went from two co-hosts on primetime to one. And then for a while there, we had to go to syndication from midday from, I think we had Colin Cowherd and so
Tony Kornheiser before Cowherd.
Yeah. And so we had to do that. And then I fought and I got back middays and I don't even remember what show was the first one. It might have been Frank and Buck, or I don't even remember. We had so many different midday shows. But I remember
it was me and Buck, and then it was Moose and I, Moose and Muhammad, and then Yarbs and I.
That was 10 to 12 or 12 to 3. I don't even remember.
We started off 10 to, well, we first started off 10 to 11. Then you had the afternoon guys doing 11 till 4. Well,
at one point, we had primetime doing 2 to 7.
Yeah, there was a time we went to 2, I think 12 to 2. I think there was a time we went 12 to 3.
We had that changeover hour that we called it. I don't remember, the handoff. The handoff.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
That was five hours of radio. Boy.
And all of that was just me having to juggle.
Yeah.
And I didn't want. I knew if we went back to syndication, we'd never go back live in those hours. I knew it. I knew if I went back to syndication from 10 to 3, they would never let me put a live show back on there. And that's why, over the last 2 or 3 years of there, we had to try anything we had. We had guys that were on the radio that weren't ready. But I don't mean that.
No.
Yeah. When I'm sitting right next to me. But I knew that they were going to have to cut their teeth on air, and there was going to be embarrassing moments. And Frank had his fair share of them. And you know, even if you talk to some of the guys like Nate and Colin who were thrown on, you know, early, probably earlier than they should have been, it was what we had to do to keep live programming on there. I didn't want to become a sports station that just ran syndication in middays because, number one, I wanted a good lead in for primetime. And number two, from a sales standpoint, you have more inventory when you have live programs. So there's a lot that went into it. But FNZ was the most expensive station to run in that building. So
it didn't make financial sense when you looked at the books. But if you could understand, you know, the value that we brought as a station to the clients that we had,
Yep. It
was so personal, right? And when you went and talked to somebody about Bubba's Barbecue, you know, you're endorsing them and it just meant more than having a commercial run.
Yeah. I mean, all the guys on our stations, whether it was Mark, who had been there the longest, to Pack, to Gary, to you, to Penner, to Chris, to, I mean, all the guys we had over the years, Slania, Noble, and we had a lot of guys, Buck. Yeah, our clients basically were paying for the equity that you guys had in this marketplace and the name that you guys had. So everyone knew who you guys were. Everybody knew who yours was. I mean, Mark was on every damn show. Him and Slania have to have some type of record for being on every show. And Frank, you're probably right up there too. But Mark was a part of every show and for a long time. And so, you know, but that's why we moved all that stuff around, was because we had no choice, or I was going to syndication, and I just didn't want to do that. And we were lucky to, we really didn't have to. And you know, live programming just always beats syndication. I don't care what, whether it's sports or news, when you're, you know, when you're talking the local stuff, on a local station,
live and local.
Yeah. Which we were. And like I said, now Charlotte has two stations. And so Mark, you know, there's a couple other things, and we're going to close this down soon because it's been great. And this is what I wanted this series to be, is I just want to tell stories. I want the guests to tell stories.
First of all, it just shows how old we are. That's yeah. As if you didn't already know.
I had not seen Mark in probably a couple of years until today. And he walks in and hey, how are you? And
Mark, we just pick up where we left off.
Yeah. I mean, and Mark looks the damn same. I'm limping around after two back surgeries. I can barely walk.
Same.
Mark looks the same. And you know, Mark covered one thing that, and Mark could tell a lot of stories about this, but Mark was the guy for us that always went to the locker room. So Mark, every Hornet game, every Panther game, Mark was the guy.
This. Tell about Derek Coleman's story. Yes,
that's what I was going to ask you to tell. Because first of all, Mark has seen every athlete from the 90s naked.
He's seen more penises than a porn star.
And yeah. Some were more discreet about showing it than others. Invited you to come look at this.
I remember
they were proud of it. Hey, Mason, he was like, "Hey, spread out, welcome you in." I'm like, "I'm good, Mace. I'm good over here."
Mark would go to the locker, and we would like bust his ass the next day. Like, all right, who came out there? who did you get to interview while he's just sitting there, man, with his junk right in your face? But tell the Derek Coleman story.
So, Coleman's with the Hornets, and I don't forgot who they were playing. I don't even remember if they won or lost the game. So after the game, in the locker room, and then you know this, Frank. We've all been in the locker rooms. It's pretty nice in there. You got a big screen TV. There's a cooler in there with Gatorade and drinks and all this stuff. So, you know, I'm waiting to get to Coleman to talk about the game, and the TV's on. I don't even remember what was on, and I'm standing there, and all of a sudden I hear this. Hey, I look around. Was he talking to me? Coleman talking to me? He goes, hey, MF-er, get out of the way. I'm trying to watch television. And I literally thought, you know how I said I thought I was going to die when Pack was driving us down 74 in Shelby?
Yeah.
I thought Derek Coleman was going to kill me. I literally thought he was going to. So I moved out of the way. I was like, sorry, DC. I'm sorry, man. He goes, appreciate it.
Yeah. He I remember Mark told us that the next day, because Derek Coleman had a really interesting reputation. Either people loved him or hated him. And whenever I see interviews with him now, he seems more likely than he was back then. But Mark was our guy. So all the sound that we used on there, I mean, Mark was in every, I mean, Mark was in locker rooms with Robert Parrish. He was in locker rooms with, you know, Kelly Chipuka. I mean, you can go all the way back to the Hornets and the Panthers.
Yep.
And so anybody on the Panthers, when you covered, did you ever have any experience in there that you were like, Not when you saw Frank naked and you were shocked about how small.
That's when I stopped going in the locker room. I'm not going in there anymore.
I had the towel on. That was discreet.
Yeah, I would too. I would wear like a jumper.
Frank, you know this, and DJ as well. There were certain guys that the media knew he'd give us a sound bite.
Yeah.
We're going straight for his locker because we know Smitty.
Yeah.
Everybody made a beeline for Smitty's locker because you knew Smitty was going to say something to piss somebody off somewhere.
Yeah.
So you made a beeline for him. Pap, on the other hand, obviously didn't say a whole lot.
Yeah.
And we could stand there for 40, 45 hour waiting on Pap to come out. And sometimes he would never come out.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was always guys that you knew he's a good soundbite. Let's go to him. But there was never, I never got threatened like I kind of did with Derek Coleman. No.
Who has the best food? Like out of all the teams you've covered, who has the best, like,
catering? So Mark would also go before the games to sit up in the press box.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Mark was single a lot of these years, so he could, at nighttime, he didn't have to worry about kids. Yeah, so
this was my dinner. I'm going to cover the Hornets tonight, so I'll just eat dinner then.
Yeah, he saved money.
There was a time where the Panthers were second to none, and I would put their food spread against anybody in the NFL. Nowadays, you see Ross Tucker, when he tweets out pictures of him, it's like, dude, you're living it up, Ross.
Yeah.
I wish we had it as good. The Hornets were okay, but the Panthers back in the day did a damn good job of feeding the media.
I remember UNC Charlotte, you know, where I went to school, and I went to their games. I was 2 years old. My dad was a big Charlotte fan. And when I cut the deal to carry them, in the deal, I got like 6 seats under the basket on the floor, and then I think 4 or 6 on press row. And my dad, I would always give him 2. He likes sitting on press row. And then, you know, I would use the seats under, I'd give them away or whoever. And I would, I'd never really covered locker rooms. It'd been a long time. Like, you know, I almost kind of leapfrogged that when Kellogg came. So I'd never had those experiences. I mean, I did it a few times, but Mark was our guy. And then we had Mike Cranston over the years and Shea Griffin and, you know, great guys that did that. But at the Charlotte games, I would go back there, you know, at halftime just to see if I was hungry or whatever. And I remember they had these damn chocolate chip cookies, and you know I love cookies. And I would take like six of them. And so I never experienced what the Panthers had, with because even when I would go up to the press, I never would go in there. I was normally talking to, you know, somebody that I was dealing with through deals, whatever. But I remember Charlotte used to have great cookies. I don't know if they still do anymore.
The Panthers used to, they don't do this anymore, but they used to, depending on which team was in to play the Panthers, they would kind of build the menu that around, like if the Eagles came in, they do cheesesteak.
Yeah, if it's Kansas City,
Cowboys came in, yeah, barbecue.
I remember you guys would tell me that.
But now it's the same stuff every week, so it doesn't matter who.
Come on, Tepper.
The guy with the most money
is
cheaping out a little bit. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
These media guys, they're all the same, too, by the way. They're all curmudgeons. They're all like marketing. Like, they love sports. They come there on their, you know, their time where they can be at home. They want to eat some good stuff. They want to be treated nicely. So come on, Tepper, step up and give these damn guys some good food.
I mean, I'm so jealous of Ross Tucker when he goes to these stadiums and they have an omelet station set up for breakfast, and then for lunch they've got this, and at halftime they got this.
Well, the Raceway used to take pretty good care of us.
Yeah.
I mean, I
who is that?
The Raceway, Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Oh man, when we would do the show out there at the 600 Club, right? 600 Club.
Yeah.
When we would do the show out there,
Speedway Club.
I remember their chef out there would. I'm not kidding. I remember him rolling whole pigs out there. I mean, they would do it to the T. I mean, that was probably the best. But they only had to do it for us once or twice a year.
Yeah.
But man, they knock it out of the park. Yep. Scott Cooper had them boys.
Yep.
And the chef loved us. And Pac obviously was so grateful and blew those guys up for how great they were. But yeah, I forgot.
I don't think Imus yelled at him, though.
Imus was miserable. I remember when we were trying to get out of that contract. Because the ratings weren't good and nobody was listening to us in the mornings at that time anyway. I mean, that's when we decided.
Imus in the morning.
Yeah. He just didn't fit in the South.
No.
That wasn't.
Yeah. He was New York. Yeah, Kellogg wanted to put him on because he wanted something in the mornings that he thought would work. And I told him it wasn't. And as a 26-year-old kid, I told him it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it didn't. But it opened. I'm glad we did do it because it did open the door to us getting to put a live morning show on, which turned into the morning sports page. And now Gary, you know, Gary's kicking butt. His podcast is picked up now. He's back on the Golf Channel. And you know, Selania is enjoying retirement. And I went. I'll tell this story and then we'll shut it down. But I had a doctor appointment about a year ago off Randolph Road, and they had to put me under, I forget what it was, but so I had to have somebody drive me. And so my wife, Krista, was busy in a meeting. So one of my good buddies, Dave, said, I'll drive you. So he drives me the thing and I go through the appointment. I come out and I'm kind of messed up on whatever they gave me, but I'm feeling all right. And we're coming up Randolph Road. And I said, hey, hang on right here real quick. And I said, one of the guys used to work for me. And Slania is, I say this to everybody, and I'm not afraid to say it. He is my favorite person to ever work for me. And it's because we had a lot of stuff in common, but also a lot of the stuff that he went through, losing his father, and a lot of things that I'll say for
just when, very relatable to you.
Yeah. And I just loved him. He's just
kind of like a second dad to you almost.
Yeah, exactly. And just a good dude. So I said, we're going to go down here by Selania's house. And I hadn't seen Selania in years. So we're driving down his road, and all the old houses that used to be there are now these gazillion-dollar big knockdown houses. And then there's Selania's house, right? You know, he's held out. You know, he could make a fortune on that, and he's held out. And we pull into the beginning of his driveway, and I see him, and he's laying in his driveway, which is, by the way, painted like a Willy Wonka meets Sesame Street meets Disney. And I'm not kidding. And he's laying there, and he's got a bicycle tire in his hand while he's laying there, and he's painting around this tire, and he's laying on his stomach. And I'm thinking, what in the hell is he doing? And his whole driveway, I'm not exaggerating, WTVI, I believe, actually did a special on this thing. Like, his driveway looks like Disneyland. He's got all these paths and colors and all these circles that he's drawn with tires and all these different pebbles that are colored. I mean, it blew me the hell away, but I totally thought he lost his damn mind. I thought he's finally lost his mind. The Coors Light and the port wine and you know, all the hard living he had in San Fran and all the great stories he can tell. So he sees me, and right away, you know, and I had not seen him in years. And right away, he's like, "Suit," you know, and again, like Mark said, it was like we hadn't missed a beat.
You just pick up where you left off.
But I asked him, "What the hell is this driveway about?" And he starts telling me. And so literally, it's become a focal point for anyone that lives in that area. They walk their kids to his driveway and they love it. They feel like they're in Disney. And I'm not exaggerating when I'm trying. I can't even really describe this. I need to find a picture and post it.
I gotta go see this driveway now.
It'll blow you away. And then I look into his garage where he's got a 61 or whatever Corvette, mint condition, mm-hmm. red with the white scoops. I always begged him.
Well, he didn't drive. He had Uber drivers.
Yeah.
He had a driver that would take him.
He actually has a new, it was a new Honda Accord, I believe, in his driveway that he had just got when I got there. But that Nissan he had for 30 years, I guess, finally gave up. But his Corvette was in his garage. But if you remember his garage, he had a loft in there that had all kinds of stuff in it, and it was completely empty. And so I'm like, "What happened to all the stuff that you had up there?" He goes, and I went through all of it, threw a lot of it away. But he goes, "I'll tell you what, when I did it, I had a ladder to get up there or whatever. But when I got up there, I got stuck." And I went, "What do you mean you got stuck?" And he goes, "I couldn't get down. Like, I couldn't contort my body to get on this ladder to get down." And I'm like, "So it was just you up in this loft by yourself?" Because it was like 95 degrees outside. I was sweating my ass off. And his neighbor and really good friend, Jasper, he's yelling Jasper's name. "Jasper! Jasper!" For 4 hours, he was stuck up in this damn thing. Before Jasper, I guess, finally heard him calling his name and came over. And I told Selenia, I'm like, number one, that is a typical Selenia story. It would have been the lead story on the morning show the next day if he were still on the air, and we would have laughed our asses off and had a good time with it.
Well, this is before you walked into the house and saw the uncashed check from like 5 years ago that he had.
Yeah, we had issues. I mean, with that.
If it ever come push shove, you know, when it's all going to be our time someday. I'm going in his backyard and I'm digging that thing.
Oh, he's
Ty Webb from Caddyshack.
Yeah, remember? Yeah, he is.
He's got
checks lying around like, "Oh, there's a check. That's a check for $612.
I'd have to call him. Like, literally, the accounting department will call me and say, "Hey, need to call Slaney. He's had a check for like 6 months. He hasn't cashed it." Yeah. I'd call him like, "Dude, I know you made a ton of money on real estate in California. And I know that check really doesn't mean a lot to you, but I need you to cash the damn thing." It's like, and by the way, Selenia would tell stories about Ricky Henderson, because when Selenia did TV out in San Fran, he became buddies with all. I mean, he was there during the Joe Montana, the Bill Madden, John Madden, and Ricky Henderson, and he would tell these stories, which I heard some other people tell when Ricky passed away a couple months ago, of going to Ricky's house, and he would have checks for $6,000, $10,000, $20,000 just laying there that weren't cash. And then I hear this story about Ricky Henderson. I think the first check he ever got for $1 million, he put it in a frame or whatever and put it on his wall. And never cashed it. So like 6-7 months goes by, and I think it was the Oakland A's, whoever the GM was, he had to like literally go, "Ricky, what are you doing with that $1 million check?" He's, "Oh man, it's hanging on my wall." And the GM goes, "Well, you need to cash it. Like, we can give you another one that you can hang up there, but you got to cash that one." And so it always reminded me of Selenia for the same reason. And Selenia's a piece of work. We didn't even get into the softball days where we had the FNZ softball team at Park Road Park, and Selenia.
He still swears to this day that he didn't walk a girl to get to me to load the bases. He says it never happened. I'd say it did happen.
Selenia,
I made him pay.
Selenia played for WCNC when he worked there, so we would play against him. And he would come out there in like these red, crazy looking pants, a shirt like he just painted the Eiffel Tower, and he pitched, and he was pounding brews. And our games would be like at 9 in the morning, 10 in the morning. He's pounding brews over there, and we would play him, and that was always the two best teams that would always make it to the championship. But Mark, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Guys, thank you for having me. And this was a great memory. Walk down memory lane.
Yeah, and this is when we were talking about doing a separate, you know, Suit Up Sports, where we're really just focusing on Charlotte Sport original guys. To me, anyway, Mark was the first one I thought of, because Mark was the first one I ever worked with, and Mark was the one
he was the only one at the station there longer than you.
He was, and he was a guy that I leaned on quite a bit, not only when I was learning stuff, but even when I was the boss, I always knew that if I needed somebody to come in Saturday from 6 to midnight, Mark was selfless. Mark would do whatever we needed, and he always did, no matter what show he was on, whether we needed him to talk more or less, whether we needed him to screen calls, pull the traffic, pull this, pull that, run the board, whatever it was.
I can't tell you the number of times that I slept at that station when we would get the rare snowstorm.
Yeah. Mark was our guy. And there was times I'd have Mark, when he slept there, make sure he was watching over my country station.
He was truly the glue. I remember those days as well when he would stay there. And this is even when he was married, when he was doing our show. He was, you'd get there, getting ready for your show, and he hadn't gone home yet. So
yeah,
he's truly the glue that held the WFNZ brand together.
He also watched more sports than anybody. Like,
he is an encyclopedia.
Like, we all watch sports.
But and I have to also mention one of the greatest putt-putt golfers of all time.
True that.
19, baby.
That 19 on Gastonia. Yeah,
that par on 17 will haunt me till I die. I had a chance for 18, and missed the.
Yep, big putt-putt guy out in Gastonia.
Yep.
And Mark was definitely the glue. I mean, there wasn't a job at that station that Mark didn't do except drive the big unit, probably, which I did once, and I backed into something. I forget what I backed into, but I put a big hole in the back of it, and I got out and I pulled it as tight as I could, and I never said a word. I never got busted for it. But thank you, Mark. Tell everybody again where they can catch you during the week, Monday through Friday.
Every day, Monday through Friday, 2 to 6 on ESPN 730 with Bobby Rudzinski and Al Wallace, former Panther. So check us out.
Twitter.
A lot going on. Twitter at Mark Yarbrough. Twitter is something I never thought I would be on, but 5 years ago I bit the bullet, got on there, and I think it's crazy. A lot of the days on there,
you've had a lot of fake accounts.
Yes, there was a fake account set up for me that I wanted nothing to do with it. That wasn't me. This is me.
Mark is the old school sports fan. He hates, and I don't know if he still did, but Mark hated fantasy anything. Yeah. He would not do fantasy sports. He didn't like the social media stuff. If I'm not mistaken, your wife Lisa is the one that really got you to finally get on Twitter, right?
Like, yeah, and when I went to work for 730, which is ironically 5 years ago, that I did that. They were like, "Hey, are you on Twitter?" And I was like, "No." They're like, "Yeah, let's get you on Twitter." Yeah. So I did it.
The other thing that the Yarbs hated, I don't know if anybody knew this, but they will now, is he hated those cyclers on
on Park Road.
On Park Road.
Yes. Yes.
By gas.
Saturday mornings.
Don't talk bad about them dudes.
I know.
You do not want them on your ass.
Well, I know. I remember Mike Jaminski. G-Man was a big bike rider. He would push back on that. He's like, "Hey, take it easy on those bikers." Nah, dude,
they get fired up.
What did you learn? I learned the Yarbs didn't like bike riders taking up the space.
They'll get on your ass. I know. I made a comment one time, and one of my fraternity brothers, Neil Boyd, is big in that area still to this day. And he like sent me a text message all mad. I'm like, "Dude, I was just kind of kidding." I went to a FCC meeting, first and only one I've ever went to. And Colin Powell's son was the head of the FCC at the time. So we all went. And of course, the group I went with and like every other radio person in Charlotte that was going, we all happened to run at each other at the same bar beforehand. So we're like 3 hours at the bar. We go to this FCC thing where we're just watching. We're not there to say anything. And we're sitting there and we're feeling no pain. And all of a sudden, like 100 dudes come walking in to get in line at where the city council does their meetings. And I mean, all the way out, up the stairs, out the door, like 100 dudes. And I'm thinking, I'd never been to one of these meetings, so I have no clue what's going on. And they all had like these bicycles on their lapels or whatever. And so me, I'm like, "Who the hell are these guys?" And they're like, "I don't know. They look like they're just a bunch of cyclists." So they're in line, which means they're here to talk to Colin Powell's son. They get 2 minutes. So these dudes start talking, man. And they were all there because a morning show in Raleigh, and I forget the name of it, started dumping all over these cyclists and saying that if you see these dudes, hit them in the ass with like two liter bottles. And they're telling these stories, dude. And I'm trying my damnest to not go into a laughing fit. Not because I agreed with what was said. What was because just hearing these grown men, some of them were getting very emotional. Yeah. But when I lost it, was a dude gets up there and he's saying the same thing. And he goes, and he's like starting to cry. And he's like, and then this guy, I'm driving down the road, minding my own business. And sure enough, this dude comes by in a car and he had listened to that morning show and he hit me right in the ass with a wiffle ball bat. And when he said wiffle ball bat, I started laughing so hard and loud that they asked me to leave the meeting. And I got up and I walked out of there and I'm thinking, oh God, I'm going to be in trouble. Man. I mean, I could, all these cyclists are looking at me like they're going to want to whoop my ass. And I'm thinking, all right, whatever. But they don't mess around. So be careful talking about the cyclists.
It's like that show, that Seinfeld show, the episode with Kramer, when all the kids are walking behind them.
That's it.
They don't mess around. But but Mark, thank you so much for joining us. And and anyone listening, this is the first of the new series we're doing called Charlotte Sport Originals. And we're going to have, you know, radio guys, newspaper guys, athletes, anybody that has been in this market for a long time.
Can't wait to get Chuck Howard on Uncensored.
Good Lord.
Tune into that.
For Chuck to get on, he's going to have to bring us some good bourbon.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't walk in the door. In the
How many times has he been fired for using the, you know, the curse word?
I don't know. That's a whole.
Chuck Howard Uncensored.
We'll see how many of those stories Chuck wants to reveal. Yeah. I'm not going to reveal them. But thank everybody for listening. Again, you can get this wherever you get your favorite podcast, and you can watch it on our YouTube channel. Thanks to Big D over there. Holding down the fort with the production.
Big D.
He had an accident yesterday, and I hear something upstairs, and he comes down with blood all over his face, and he had tripped and hit his eye. Luckily, it wasn't that big of a deal. We got our buddy Mike Conrad in here, yard maintenance extraordinaire, who is our first audience member. First and only. He hasn't left yet, so I guess it hasn't sucked that bad. But
or he was sleeping and just woke up.
He might have been sleeping. But thank you, Mark. Thank you, Frank. And Suit Up Sports will be back Tuesday or Wednesday with our new episode, which will be covering playoff football and all that stuff. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.